I don't speak Haitian. Those were the first words out of Ruth's daughter's mouth when I stepped into the hospital room. I don't speak Haitian, and who are these people? And my mother is dying. And then just lots and lots of tears. A healthy hysteria, considering that, yes, her mother was dying. I was working as a student chaplain that summer in a predominantly Jewish rehabilitation facility, a place where mostly elderly people came to recuperate from falls and sickness. The patients lived in the working class inner city neighborhoods of Boston. Before that, they lived in Poland and Russia and the Ukraine. They immigrated. They spoke halting English with me, but lit up with joy when they heard a roommate who spoke their native tongue. They were quick to find family in common, or a rabbi who knew their rabbi, or a cousin who visited that town long ago. It was a place of reunions, of new friendships formed from a tragic past, joy from finding other survivors. And it was a place where many people came to die. Ruth came to the rehab center to get stabilized enough to go home and die there. With no wires or beeping machines, with no ruckus, she told me, waving her hands frustratedly, her arm blotched with IV bruises at all the machines surrounding her. Just Ruth and her daughter, who was flying as fast as she could from the West Coast to wait with her mother. Ruth said she was waiting for the angel of death to swoop into the room, to scoop her up in his arms and gently carry her away. She wasn't afraid. It wasn't a bad thing. But the angel was coming faster than expected, and Ruth wasn't going to make it home. As Ruth drifted in and out of consciousness, she was hovered over by nurses and nurses' aides who did holy work, like turning her to avoid bed sores, of changing tubes and swabbing at scabs, who smoothed lotion onto her paper-thin skin. Women who also immigrated from a radically different land, women with dark skin and lilting accents who sang softly together while they worked, who laughed all the time. Ruth's daughter raced into the hospital to find a gaggle of women surrounding her mother, smoothing her hair, massaging her hands, and all singing softly in an unfamiliar tongue, that Haitian Creole. Her mother surrounded by strangers, her mother so tiny in that hospital bed, all of a sudden, completely helpless. "Who are these people?" she demanded of the doctor, touching my mother as if they know her, as if they are her family. "Who are these strangers?" She didn't mean to be ungrateful. She was overwrought. She had a lot of daughter guilt at not getting there sooner, at not living closer. These women weren't her family or her neighbors or even the people from her synagogue, not the people who were supposed to tend you before you die. "Who are these strangers who know my mother?" Pluralism is complicated. In a nation of many cultures and tongues, we celebrate the diversity that surrounds us. We are a smarter and a more creative and a kinder nation because we come from many lands. Hospitals now look like a meeting of the United Nations, the Somalian doctor working with the Nicaraguan nurse and the Irish X-ray technician. This is a good thing. But when your mother is very sick, and when she looks as delicate as a bird feather in a big white bed, it is a shock to see people from an island that you have trouble finding on a map tending gently to her every need. Do these caregivers share my values? Will they care for her in the way that her own people, her own family would care for her? Ruth's daughter reminded me of the people who ask, "But what do Unitarian Universalists have in common?" As you know, we don't all believe the same things. There are pagan UUs, Muslim, Buddhist, atheist, agnostic, Unitarian, Universalist, and this plurality throws people. They wonder what, without shared belief, we find in common, as if we all stand around at coffee hour just looking at each other. As if being in a faith community is all discussion about belief and doesn't also include our labors to make our lives meaningful, to find a more ethical way to live, to affirm values kinder than that of the mainstream culture. As if sometimes we don't just want to talk about the weather or what on earth our children are doing. We Unitarian Universalists are inspired to live by seven principles, and the seventh is that we respect the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. This is a mouthful. The interdependent web of all existence. To me, it means that the actions I take matter. What I do affects everyone else in the web, this world that we share. The choices I make affect the plants and the animals and the people on this planet. We are all bound in relationship. This is a huge responsibility, but also a gift. We're held together in a web. You are embraced by the whole of existence. You are not ever alone. Who here has done a trust fall? One of these goofy things they make you do at summer camp or awful corporate retreats. It's supposed to make you build confidence in your group. You close your eyes and you let yourself fall backwards, trusting that your partner is there to catch you, trusting that they won't think it's funny to let you fall, trusting they aren't distracted by their cell phone or just aren't that interested in this exercise. That they care enough to put out their arms and embrace your dropping form. And you are helpless. Pluralism is a trust fall, a leap of faith that we will catch each other. Stranger and friend. Our seventh principle is a trust fall. As we plot our lives, remembering the web, making sacrifices to benefit creatures that we may never encounter. Seeing your own mother cared tenderly for by strangers is a trust fall, a faith that they will embrace her like you would embrace their mother if you had the chance. Every month, our congregation focuses on a theme, and this month, our theme is passion. I have a passion for pluralism because pluralism can change our world. Thinking through the lens of we instead of me, when we is all of the creatures under this earth and sky, this is a world changer. Imagine how tenderly we could care for each other, for our oceans and for our forests, if me was always we. For many years, this congregation has been tenderly held by the CARE team, a small group of individual members who have done a fantastic job of caring for us. The CARE team brings meals, gives rides, visits the homebound. If you have a baby or surgery or you lose someone close to you, the CARE team has always been ready to pitch in, to do a load of laundry or pick up a sack of groceries or drive you to church. It is a deeply nourishing spiritual practice to care for another person. And our CARE team members were fed by their relationships built when church family members were in need. But our congregation is growing, and it is thrilling. It is so exciting to meet these captivating new people that have come in our doors. But this year, our church family got too big to have just four or five people caring for us. Deeply nourishing as caring is, it doesn't add hours to the day. And so our CARE team has gracefully dissolved in order to make way for a more pluralistic, sustainable vision of caring ministry. So we have a new model, a model that puts every single one of you in the position to share care. From today on, all care needs will be handled locally by church members in your neighborhood. Here's how it works. Lori, our church administrator, divided the whole congregation up geographically on a big grid. It took forever. If you are in Shoreline, west of I-5, you are in one group. If you're on Shoreline east of I-5, you're in another group. If you are in Magnolia or Greenwood or Ballard, that's a group. But if you're in Linwood, you're in a different group. Or Lake Forest Park is a group. Each geographically bound group has roughly 10 families. Some have more, some have less, but around 10 households. That's your neighborhood group. Your neighborhood group is now your care team, and you are a member of that team. So let's say you have surgery and you need help getting groceries. You can cook, you can do all those things, but you just can't get to the store. You give me a call or an email, and I'm going to call your neighborhood captain. Every neighborhood group has a captain, but they aren't necessarily the one who are going to go get your groceries. They're going to pass on the request to everybody else in your neighborhood group over email. And whoever can help with your grocery run will respond. So let's say somebody in your group has a baby and could use help with meals, casseroles, and things like that. They contact me, and I contact their neighborhood captain, who sends out an email asking for casseroles. If you have a light week and you can help out with a casserole, super. You respond to your captain. I'll be there Tuesday. If you can't, you just delete the email. It's not that complicated. Neighborhood groups are awesome because of proximity. It's easy for me to give a neighbor a ride to church if that neighbor lives in my neighborhood. It's not out of my way. It's a lot harder if I'm in Linwood and they live in Magnolia. Neighborhood care teams mean a lot more of us busy folks can help out because we don't have to add in a lot of transportation time. And they're also neat because groups can meet for things beyond care, for a potluck or a movie night or an impromptu kickball game. You have a church family just down the street, and you have all their email addresses, and you can shoot them an email to do something fun. So what's next is neighborhood captains. I am recruiting. I need you to be a neighborhood captain. Captains don't have to do all the care effort. They're not responding to every need of their group. They're just passing the word along. They are communicators. So if you're a person who is comfortable checking email a few times a day, passing things on, responding to responses, then you should be a captain. Captains will receive their group's email addresses and a brief training, and it's going to be fun. If you're a good communicator, let's talk about you being a neighborhood captain. Once captains are in place, I'll let you all know what group you're in and who is in your group and who is your captain. Captain or not, if you want to plan something fun, go ahead and email your group. These neighborhood groups are microcosms of the web of all existence of which we strive to respect. We are going to lean back and trust each other. Perhaps you won't know everyone in your neighborhood group. Perhaps an unfamiliar face is going to show up at your door with a casserole. Perhaps you will give a ride to someone at church that you've only met once. Lean back and trust your church family to catch you. If you feel truly unsafe with somebody in your neighborhood group, let me know immediately. But otherwise, let's engage in a passion for pluralism. Let's embrace the changing face of our congregation. We are too big for one care team. Now we get to nurture all our spirits by caring for each other. I would love it if the people who have served on the care team for the last 40 or so years would just stand real quick so we could thank them. So the rotating cast. Yay! Thank you for nurturing us and holding us so closely to your hearts. This plurality, this chance to be a care team, is an opportunity to see how good it feels to help a neighbor, to spend maybe an hour a month in care of your church family, lending a hand, with chores or preparing meals or running out on an errand. An opportunity to let someone you don't know as well care for you, to lean back and know that they're going to catch you in their arms. So back to Ruth, our hospital patient. As her daughter spent days by her mother's side, she saw how gently the Haitian nurses and nurses' aides tended to Ruth, the kindness with which they held her, the joy they felt when Ruth smiled. They weren't from Ruth's family or her neighborhood or even her synagogue, but they were a part of Ruth's web of existence. And they treated her like her comfort was their own comfort, like there was no I, but just we. Ruth passed away in those arms, unfortunately, not away from the ruckus of all the machines, but happy and relaxed and surrounded by those who cared the most about her, by her blood family, but also her world family. May we all be so lucky. May we care for each other so gently. And may we hold the web so reverently. Amen and blessed be.